No, start in. Just give your name and this thing right now.
Well, my name is Edward R. Farrell. I was born in Minnesota, a little town out of St. Paul called Shakopee. And my folks left there when I was, so they tell me, when I was just a baby, about a year old, I guess. And we came out to Bismarck, North Dakota. Stayed there, I think. I think about 6 years, and then we came out to Puget Sound.
What year were you born in?
1882. Yeah.
And when did you come to Alaska?
Well, the first trip to Alaska was in 1898. I came up on a little steamer. I was a dishwasher on a little steamer. And we stayed there overnight and went back to the Seattle again.
Became a Skagway? No, not then.
I went back to Seattle and I stayed around there until 1900. And then I came up to Skagway and Whitehorse. We went over the White Pass over to Whitehorse. I left Whitehorse the 17th day of March 1900 for the 450-mile walk down to Dawson. We were out, I think, 3 days when we met an Irishman on the trail. He was pulling his sleigh by the neck. And I talked to him for a little while and asked him how things was going. Well, he said, pretty tough. He said, if I was only back in Boston, he said, I'd promise God and the people I'd get along with the silver and never mind the gold. Well, I think we were 21 or 2 days and walking. I mixed up with a fellow that was hauling in some supplies to Dawson, and once in a while I could ride, and he was incidentally he was hauling a little stuff for me too. I think we were about 22 days getting into Dawson. Well, when I got there, well, there was plenty of work. I worked around the creek some, and most of the Bonanza and El Dorado. Finally got a lease on Hunker Creek. I worked there for a while until the stampede came up from Fairbanks here. That was they started to come back in 1902. And pretty good reports, some of them, and some of them were bad, but I decided anyhow in three that I'd come to Fairbanks, which I did. And I've practically been here ever since.
How did you get to Fairbanks? Did you come over the...
No, I came on boat down to Chino, and then we, from Chino up, the pole up to Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. Well, I was on Fairbanks Creek and Clary Creek. And then in 1905, I decided I'd go to the Totalinika country. And we were over there, I think, for one winter and one summer, and then back to Fairbanks. We didn't find nothing over there to speak of. Well, about that time, Dome Creek was being struck. So I went on Dome Creek for a while. And from there, I went up on stampeded up on the Chena River, where the headwaters of the Chena River to Palmer Creek. Well, we were there a little over a year, I think, and didn't. We mined there for one summer, and I think we had $40 apiece when we got through in the fall. So that didn't look very good to us. So back to Dome Creek, and I got a lease there on Dome Creek and made a little money there. Well, about that time then, the Iditarod stampede and the Ruby stampede was on. I went to Ruby. I was in 11. And when I got there, I took in the creeks, and every place I'd go, there was somebody ahead of me. And invariably, I'd run on into the same name, Mr. Johnson. So I got tired of reading Mr. Johnson's name, and finally I came to a big spruce tree, and I squared it all off good. I wrote on this tree, I claim everything Mr. Johnson don't claim. Well, back to Fairbanks again, and then there was quite a little excitement in the Valdez country. And me and another fellow by the name of Angus McDougall, you might have known him. He had a horse, and I bought another one, and we got a buckboard, and we started out over the trail. I think we're 9 or 10 days or 11, something like that, making the trip. And there was no road to speak of then. So when I got there, we got there, there was quite a crowd gathered around us, and one fellow stepped up and said, did you come over the trail? I said, no, I came through it. The mud was about up the axles in a lot of places, and we had to ford all the streams. Well, we did a little quartz prospecting there, and that didn't turn out. And we went over to the Copper River country and put in the winter there and back to Fairbanks again. Well, then I went out on Pedro Creek, got a lease out there. And that didn't turn out very good. We got a hold of a piece of ground, and there was the ground below us and the ground above us went $1.25 a foot. Ours went 35 cents. So we didn't make any money there. And from there to Livengood. That was another hard trip. We started off from Olness with an 80-pound pack apiece on our backs, and I think we were 13 days getting into Livengood. Well, we had to pack everything we eat, and our bedding and so on. And when we got away down on the river, we didn't know exactly where we were going to go when we left here. We knew there was a strike over there, but we didn't know exactly where it was. But we got away down below the strike anyway, and it took us a couple of days more to get up to where the supposed to be the money was. And Livengood and his partner just got a hold of bedrock. And we had to take a microscope to see the colors. They were so fine. Well, anyway, we staked and sank a few holes, but we didn't find a thing. But the next ones that came after us, they had to go back farther to get ground, you see, on the benches. And then the next ones after them came in, they still had to go farther back, and they were the ones who got the money. We got the experience. Well, then back to Fairbanks again for the winter, and Ruby began to show up pretty good then. So in the spring of 15, I started off for that 300-mile walk to Ruby. Well, I made it all right and got down there, and the country was pretty well staked then. I made a little money right away on boiler work. I was pretty handy at repairing boilers. I made a little money and bought some ground and made a little money in Ruby.
Where did you work on Ruby?
On Me Ketchum Creek, principally. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I think I was in the Ruby country about 12 years. And along about 25, I came up to Mason Creek, where Mason Creek is. And was there a few years. Well, we didn't find much there. A little gold, but not enough to be commercial. And from there, in about 30, I think, we went to Rampart and bought out the Idaho Bar and worked on that for one winter, two winters, in fact. And that wasn't much good. We could make a little money, but it was too much work for what money we'd get out of it. Well, then we bought a claim on Little Minook and worked there 2 or 3 years. Finally sold out to a fellow named Roberts. And I have to stop and think now where I went from there. I came back to Fairbanks anyhow. And I think I went down on the Minto Flats and had a little trading outfit there. I was trading with the natives for one summer. And then back to Fairbanks, and then I got a drilling outfit and moved it down to where they're going to put in this dam, the Rampart Canyon, and drilled there for the foundations. But it seemed like that was the time they were going to put the railroad to Nome. But they got the Japs off of the island, and they decided that they'd abandon that idea.
I surveyed that site before you fellows went down there.
Oh, is that so?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you go on the poor man stampede? I thought I saw you there.
Poor man? Yes, yeah. I was there. I was in 29.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was another blowout. No good. So I came back to Fairbanks and did some drilling over on Ohio Creek. And from there I went to the Seward country. I took the drilling outfit down there and was there a year and a half, I guess. That was really where I met my wife in Seward.
Well, you were on that stampede down to the Yukon too, weren't you?
Yeah, all the fish wheel.
Fish wheel.
Yes,
stampede.
I took that in. Yeah.
I came pretty near going on.
Well, I didn't think anything of the fish wheel picking up the gold. I didn't fall for that. But those fellas came back from over there, and he said they'd found pretty good prospects 60 feet back from the beach. Well, I told my wife, I said, I'd better be getting over there. I've taken in the rest of them. I might as well take in this, too. So, of course, that was absolutely a failure. They never, don't think they ever did have any gold. There was a fellow over there and had a little drill, and I put a hole down 50 feet with that drill, and we never got a color.
What was it like in Fairbanks in the early days? Can you tell us something about that?
Well, when I got here, there was hardly any buildings here. There was a few log cabins, and the Barnett had his store down there, and where the NC is now. And I lived over in Grail that winter in a little cabin. I guess that's all fell in by this time. And I put in that winter around Fairbanks Creek and Clary. And I missed it on Clary. I went over, me and another fellow went over on Clary Creek and walked down pretty well down on the lower end, and the ground was open there. So we looked it over, and the fellow was with me always says, this don't look good to me. He's quite a lot older man than I was. He says, don't look very good to me. There's nothing but a moose pasture down here. It's all trees, you know. And so we walked away from there. And about a year after that, they were drift mining down there, taking out $1,000 a day there.
Yeah, I can tell stories like that about the Nome country. My father.
Yeah.
Well, you knew Pedro then also.
Oh, yes, I knew Pedro well, yes.
Was that strike made on Pedro Creek? Or
the first strike, the first.
Or the mouth of Pedro and Gilmore?
Yeah, that's right. They called it the discovery on Pedro Creek. Mm-hmm. Now, that was funny. There was a few people on Pedro, and there was a little store there. And there was a fellow named Charlie Mack. He was over on Fairbanks Creek. And he was on some little creek there, and he just had one claim there. And he came over to Pedro to get some supplies, and I guess he got a hold of a little mule in the meantime. And he told the bunch on Pedro that they'd made a little strike on Fairbanks Creek. And he intended to go back there and stake, you see. But instead of that, he spent two or three days on Pedro Creek, and by the time he got back, well, there the whole Fairbanks Creek was staked. All he had was one little claim on Crane Gulch. I guess you know where that is.
Tell me, was it McCarty
who
made that strike on Fairbanks Creek?
Yeah. Yeah, they were on Discovery Fairbanks Creek.
Do you know the story of that strike, Ed? Hmm? Do you know the story of that strike?
Well, not exactly, but just what do you mean by the story?
Well, I heard he tried to stake in other creeks, and they shoved him off on that, and he finally went on that.
Well, that was right. Yeah, mm-hmm. That was right. He was kind of forced onto it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was a pretty good move. We made a lot of money there.
Well, on Prairie, did you hear how that strike was made? Maybe you can tell us how those strikes were made here in those days.
Al Hildy was one of the first discoverers there on Prairie Creek. And Clary had quite a lot of influence on it too.
Was he there himself, Clary? Was Clary there himself, or did he?
Oh yes, he was there. Yeah.
He was a son-in-law of. He was some kind of kin to.
Barnett.
Barnett.
Well, I think he was a brother to Barnett's wife. Oh, I think that's the relation there. Mm-hmm. Oh, he was after Marshall here, you know, Ferry. Mm-hmm.
Well, Bonifield, he was a gambler here, wasn't he? That made
that's right.
Strike
a gambler and a banker.
Mm-hmm.
Bonifield had quite a reputation as a walker. He used to start in from here and walk clear through to Hot Springs in one day, 75 miles.
Well, tell me, when did Ed Stroker come here? Wasn't he in the Circle Country?
Yes.
before Dawson was struck?
Yeah, he was there.
I've seen his name over there.
He was quite an early arrival here. He was he carried mail on the down on the Yukon and all around. Then Ed worked for he was bookkeeper for E.R. Papers for many years here before he got in the banking business.
To hear about some of the old timers, if you can tell us some. Who was this?
Well, all the old timers. I knew them all here. Old Dave Petrie and Bill McPhee, Al Moranzi. Oh, I knew all of them at one time. Yeah. I don't know if they ever seen that picture taken in front of the Pioneer Hotel or not. Quite a lot of the old timers there. I have the picture home. I think that was taken in 1910.
I don't know of any other questions I can ask.
Well, tell a little bit about Ben Falls if you can.
Can you tell about Ben Falls?
Yeah, I can. Well, I was I took a drilling outfit over to Goose Creek last winter, and we drilled quite a few holes over there. Didn't get very good results, so I brought the outfit back to Livengood, and I got to talking to Ben, and he had that little proposition on Wilbur Creek, so we got together and did a little mining there last summer. That was about the...
Well, that was an old creek that was discovered in the early days, wasn't it?
Well, it was struck about the time Livengood was. Along about 1913. I guess the Wilbur Creek wasn't struck till 14 or 15, maybe.
Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about Suckett Creek?
About Suckett?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I couldn't tell you anything more much than we took an outfit up there. I took my wife along with me. We mined there that summer. That was another blow up. And in the fall, my partner and me built a little small boat. We had just room to sit in, that's about all. And we put that boat in the river, but it wouldn't hold the three of us. So my wife had to walk down about 4 miles down through the thunder. And I guess she had quite a time. The river was crooked, you know, and sometimes we could hear, and I kept hollering to her every time we get close. Sometimes we could hear, and sometimes we couldn't hear. We finally got down to out of this little creek and got into the main John River. Well, then we all three got in the boat. And we were, I think, 2 days getting down to the main Koyukuk. And this boat was very cranky. I thought she was moving around all the time. I'd reach back and tell her to keep still. She says, "I am sitting still. I can't sit any stiller." Well, we had to camp on the bar on one night, and we didn't have no bedding. So we built a big fire, and we slept on the bar till daylight. Pulled on down to Battles the next day.
Ed, were you on Lone Creek when Wickersham made that decision out there?
Would you speak a little louder, please?
I say, were you on Lone Creek when Wickersham made they made that well-known decision, on the Dome Creek Sioux, both all the well-known lakes. I think it was around 1905 or 6.
I didn't get that.
Well, he wants to know if you were on Dome Creek when Wickersham made the decision on some mining deal there.
Well, I was here around in the vicinity, yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was the muck discovery you're talking about.
Yeah, it involved bedrock proof. I mean, it made a determination for the rest of the camps to go by from that point on.
I was out on Dome when Caribou Bill got shot out there. He was sinking a hole in this Barnett outfit, they called him. They went to his hole and he was at lunch at the time, and they started to take his pick and shovel away. And he showed up on the scene about that time, and they told him to drop the pick and shovel, but. I can't think of his name now. He kept right on walking. So he up with a 30-30 and plunked him right through the chest.
But were you there when Barnett went out there with two men and ran Jeff Anderson off his plane?
Well, he tried to.
Point?
He tried to, but he didn't get him off. He still stayed with it.
Well, he got him off at the time, though.
Yeah.
Dave Jackson.
Well, they'd hire these subs, you might call them, and they'd go out there and restate the claim. Well, then they'd get it in court, and most of the fellows didn't have any money to defend themselves, and they'd buy them off cheap, you know. That was the way they acquired a lot of the ground. I saw them there on one below. They'd stole that ground practically, and they were packing off gold and coal oil cans off from the cleanups there.
Was there any particular place in Goldstream Valley that they had a
community?
She wanted to know about the town of Fox in Goldstream Valley.
Fox was quite a little town at one time. There was, I think, three saloons there and a couple of roadhouses. There was quite a little village there one time. And Clary Creek was a big town, you might say. I don't know how many saloons, dance halls. I would say one time there must have been anyway a dozen dance hall girls around Clary. Dome Creek was about the same way.
Is there anything particularly lower Goldstream
than
lower?
No, there's a. She wanted to know if there's any town in lower Goldstream.
How they got to their claims.
She wanted to know how they got to their claims on Goldstream Valley and if there was any town in lower Goldstream.
Well,
I
thought the anywhere. Only way they'd get there was flat-footed.
Oh, I thought there was a railroad out in there for a while.
The narrow gauge, when did that go in?
Oh, the narrow gauge ran out to Chattanooga.
Mm-hmm. When was that built, Ed?
That was built, I guess, in 5 and 6.
Oh, Charlie Joint was the...
Yeah, he was the superintendent, yes, sir. Well, many times I rode out on that. Of course, that was still running when the FE came here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the government bought it and tore it up.
Mm-hmm.
The roadbed is still there, is it?
Yes, it's parked there.
Herbie, will you ask him how we used to take off across country with an axe and a knife and a little stuff on your back and live? These newer people have never seen that.
Well, of course, them days you could get birds most any time, you know, and rabbits. When we made that trip to Livengood, we still had a little grub coming back. I had enough rice left to give a fellow had a horse, give him a feed of rice on the way back. So. See, we went from here out to Olness on the little narrow gauge, and then from Olness on, we had to walk.
Tell me, were there many caribou in those early days in this country?
Well, we didn't encounter the worst caribou, all right, but not through that section that we were in that fall, anyhow. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to know which claims you spent the most, which mining claims you spent the most time at.
You mean in the Fairbanks?
Any place, I guess.
Well, I guess I put in more time on in the Ruby Country on Me Ketchum Creek than any other claim. I think we were 5 years on that one claim.
You're drift mining then?
Drift mining, yeah. And I think we were four years on the claim on in Rampart on Little Minook.
Did Roberts make any money there afterwards?
Yes, he got out with a little money.
I thought he did. He ran down the trucks.
Well, he went at it in a pretty expensive way. He bought four trucks, and he had a little backhaul to load it with.
Did you ever see the Blue Parky man? The lady wants to know who the Blue Parky man was.
Well, his name was, I think they called him, his name was Errant, I think they called him now. I just forgotten. Mm-hmm. Oh, there was quite a little excitement over that Blue Parky man. They had guards on the wagons coming in with the gold, you know. But he never got any cleanups.
He got some gold.
Oh, he got some, yeah. But like old Cap Anderson from Dome Creek, he used to hire four or five men to come in with the cleanup. One or two ahead and back behind with rifles. I think it was more of a show than anything else.
Well, do you know anything about that very rich bench on the left limit of Goldstream? What was that bench now?
Bigler Bench?
Bigler Bench,
yeah. Well, I never mined on it, but of course I was here all the time they were working it, and I know they took out a lot of money off from it.
Yeah, I understand they took over $1 million.
Yes, I guess they did.
One bench.
I was never lucky enough to get out anything like that. I walked over engineer, I don't know how many times I could have staked on that. That was rich too. Of course, I had them days. I had a lot to learn too. I was new of the business myself. I think if it was all over to do over again, I could have done a lot better.
Trouble, we're getting too old to do anything when we know a lot.
That's right.
Well, does anybody else like to ask any questions?
Well, I think we ought to get it on the record there that he's mining most of his life here, and there's still a million opportunities that people like to go mining.
Well, I'm not giving it up yet by any means. I'm still going out
he's
next...
He's 80 years old this spring, this summer.
Yeah.
Ben Falls is 83 and he's still mining.
Yeah.
And you're still going prospecting.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, I'll be going prospecting until I kick off.
What about these fancy new ores?
Have you looked for any radioactive stuff?
No, I haven't gotten interested in that much. I've been trying to stay with the gold pretty well. I've been trying to stay with it, but don't stay with me very well.
Are there any other questions that
you can think of? If anybody's got any questions they'd like to ask, why I'd be willing to try.
What do you think of the opportunities now in Alaska?
Hmm?
What do you think of the opportunities for new finds now?
Oh, I think there's lots of country here yet.
I do too.
In fact, I know a lot of creeks that's got a good showing on right now that's never been prospected.
We'll all talk to you after the meeting. We'll get off the map.
Well, thank you, King Regent, for coming down to our party.
Hmm?
I say thank you, King Regent. You're King Regent, aren't you?
Yeah, sure.
I say thank you, then.
We just heard a recording by Ed Farrell here on February 22nd, 1962, at the Historical Society meeting. This is concluding this tape.